Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Investing in ETFs for Dummies, Second Edition, by Russell Wilde. Narrated by Kyle Snyder. Publisher's Note. In this audio edition, you will hear references to figures present in the print and ebook formats of the book. Limit of liability / disclaimer of warranty. While the publisher and authors have used their best efforts in preparing this work, they make no representations or warranties with respect to the accuracy or completeness of the contents of this work and specifically disclaim all warranties, including without limitation any implied warranties of merchantability or fitness for a particular purpose. No warranty may be created or extended by sales representatives, written sales materials, or promotional statements for this work. The fact that an organization, website, or product is referred to in this work as a citation and/or potential source of further information does not mean that the publisher and authors endorse the information or services the organization, website, or product may provide or recommendations it may make. This work is sold with the understanding that the publisher is not engaged in rendering professional services. The advice and strategies contained herein may not be suitable for your situation. You should consult with a specialist where appropriate. Further, listeners should be aware that websites listed in this work may have changed or disappeared between when this work was written and when it is heard. Neither the publisher nor author shall be liable for any loss of profit or any other commercial damages, including but not limited to special, incidental, consequential, or other damages. Introduction. Every month, it seems, Wall Street comes up with some newfangled investment idea. The array of financial products, replete with 164-page prospectuses, is now so dizzying that the old lumpy mattress is starting to look like a more comfortable place to stash the cash. But there is one product that is definitely worth looking at, even though it's been around not even 30 years. It's something of a cross between an index mutual fund and a stock, and it's called an exchange-traded fund, ETF. Just as computers and fax machines were used by big institutions before they caught on with individual consumers, so it was with ETFs. They were first embraced by institutional traders, investment banks, hedge funds, and insurance firms, because, among other things, they allow for the quick juggling of massive holdings. Big traders like that sort of thing. Personally, playing hot potato with my money is not my idea of fun. But all the same, over the past not even 20 years, I've invested most of my own savings in ETFs, and I've suggested to many of my clients that they do the same. I'm not alone in my appreciation for ETFs. They've grown exponentially in the past few years, and they'll surely continue to grow and gain influence. I can't claim that my purchases and my recommendations of ETFs account for much of the growing but global $9 trillion-plus ETF market, but I'm happy to be a very small part of it. After you've read this book, you may decide to become part of it as well, if you haven't already. About this book. As with any other investment, you're looking for a certain payoff in reading this book. In an abstract sense, the payoff will come in your achieving a thorough understanding and appreciation for a powerful financial tool called an ETF. The more concrete payoff will come when you apply this understanding to improve your investment results. What makes me think ETFs can help you make money? ETFs are intelligent. Most financial experts agree that playing with individual stocks can be hazardous to one's wealth. Anything from an accounting scandal to the CEO's sudden angina attack can send a single stock spiraling downward. That's why it makes sense for the average investor to own lots of stocks or bonds through ETFs or mutual funds. ETFs are cheap. At least 250 ETFs charge annual management expenses of 0.1% or lower, and a few charge as little as 0% a year. In contrast, the average actively managed mutual fund charges 0.63% a year. Index mutual funds generally cost a tad more than their ETF cousins. Such cost differences, while appearing small on paper, can make a huge impact on your returns over time. I crunched some numbers in Chapter 1. ETFs are open books. Quite unlike mutual funds, an ETF's holdings are, by and large, readily visible. If this afternoon, for example, I were to buy 100 shares of the ETF called the SPDR, pronounced SPIDER, S&P 500 ETF Trust, I would know that exactly 6.3% of my money was invested in Apple and 5.92% was invested in Microsoft. You don't get that kind of detail when you buy most mutual funds. Mutual fund managers, like stage magicians, are often reluctant to reveal their secrets. In the investment game, the more you know, the lower the odds that you'll get sawed in half. Newsflash. Regulators are still debating just how open the portfolios of the newer actively managed ETFs will have to be. For the time being, however, most ETFs track indexes, and the components of any index are readily visible. If you've ever read a For Dummies book before, you have an idea of what you're about to embark on. This is not a book you need to read from beginning to end. Feel free to jump about and glean whatever information you think will be of most use. There is no quiz at the end. You don't have to commit it all to memory. Most of the heavy technical matter is tucked neatly into the sidebars. But if any technicalities make it into the main text, I give you a heads up with a technical stuff icon. Foolish assumptions. I assume that most of the people reading this book know a fair amount about the financial world. I think that's a fairly safe assumption. Why else would you have bought an entire book about ETFs? If you think that convertible bonds are bonds with removable tops, and that the futures market is a place where fortune tellers purchase crystal balls, I help you along the best I can by letting you know how to find out more about certain topics. However, you may be better off picking up and reading a copy of the basic Nuts and Bolts, Investing for Dummies by Eric Tyson, Wiley. After you spend some time with that title, come on back to this book. You'll be more than welcome. Icons used in this book. Throughout the book, icons will be verbalized. These handy tools give you a heads up that certain types of information are in the neighborhood. Tip. Although this is a how-to book, you also find plenty of whys and wherefores. Any paragraph accompanied by this icon, however, is guaranteed pure, 100% unadulterated how-to. Warning. The world of investments offers pitfalls galore. Whenever you hear the warning icon, know that there is a risk of your losing money, maybe even big money, if you skip the passage. Remember. This icon indicates that something important is being said and is really worth committing to memory. Technical stuff. If you don't really care about the difference between standard deviation and beta, or the historical correlation between U.S. value stocks and real estate investment trusts, REITs, feel free to skip or skim the sections marked with this icon. Where to go from here? Where would you like to go from here? If you want, start at the beginning. If you're interested only in stock ETFs, hey, no one says that you can't jump right to chapters 3 to 6. Bond ETFs? Go ahead and jump to chapter 7. Sample ETF portfolios? Head to chapter 9. It's entirely your call. Part 1. Getting started with ETFs. In this part, find out how exchange-traded funds, ETFs, work, and how they're different from other investment options. Look into the pluses and minuses of ETFs to determine whether they're a good fit for you. Get the pieces into position for ETF investing, from starting an account to finding a brokerage house. Understand the indexers and exchanges in the ETF world. Chapter 1. ETFs. No longer the new kid on the block. In this chapter, distinguishing what makes ETFs unique. Taking a look at who's making the most use of ETFs. Appreciating ETFs' special attributes. understanding that ETFs aren't perfect. Asking whether ETFs are for you. Banking your retirement on stocks is risky enough. Banking your retirement on any individual stock or even a handful of stocks is about as risky as wrestling crocodiles. Banking on individual bonds is less risky, maybe wrestling an adolescent crocodile, but the same general principle holds. There is safety in numbers. That's why teenage boys and girls huddle together in corners at school dances. That's why news grays in groups. That's why smart stock and bond investors grab onto exchange-traded funds, ETFs. In this chapter, I explain not only the safety features of ETFs, but also the ways in which they differ from their cousins, mutual funds. By the time you're done with this chapter, you should have a pretty good idea of what ETFs can do for your portfolio. What the heck is an ETF? Remember, just as a deed shows that you have ownership of a house, and a share of common stock certifies ownership in a company, a share of an ETF represents ownership, most typically in a basket of company stocks. To buy or sell an ETF, you place an order with a broker, generally, and preferably for cost reasons, online, although you can also place an order by phone. The price of an ETF changes throughout the trading day, which is to say from 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, going up or down with the market value of the securities it holds. Sometimes there can be a little sway, times when the price of an ETF doesn't exactly track the value of the securities it holds. But that situation is rarely serious, at least not with ETFs from the better purveyors. Originally, ETFs were developed to mirror various indexes. The SPDR S&P 500, ticker symbol SPY, represents stocks from the Standard & Poor's S&P 500, an index of the 500 largest companies in the United States. The Diamonds Trust Series 1, ticker symbol DIA, represents the 30 or so underlying stocks of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, DJIA, index. The Invesco QQQ Trust Series 1, ticker symbol QQQ, formerly known as the NASDAQ 100 Trust Series 1, represents the 100 stocks of the NASDAQ 100 index. Since ETFs were first introduced, many others, tracking all kinds of things, including some rather strange things that I dare not even call investments, have emerged. The component companies in an ETF's portfolio usually represent a certain index or segment of the market, such as large U.S. value stocks, small growth stocks, or microcap stocks. If you're not 100% clear on the difference between value and growth, or what a microcap is, rest assured that I define these and other key terms in Part 2. Sometimes the stock market is broken up into industry sectors, such as technology, industrials, and consumer discretionary. ETFs exist that mirror each sector. Remember, regardless of what securities an ETF represents, and regardless of what index those securities are a part of, your fortunes as an ETF holder are tied, either directly or in some leveraged fashion, to the value of the underlying securities. If the price of Microsoft stock, U.S. Treasury bonds, gold bullion, or British pound futures goes up, so does the value of your ETF. If the price of gold tumbles, your portfolio, if you hold a gold ETF, may lose some glitter. If Microsoft stock pays a dividend, you're due a certain amount of that dividend, unless you happen to have bought into a leveraged or inverse ETF. Warning. Some ETFs allow for leveraging, so that if the underlying security rises in value, your ETF shares rise doubly or triply. If the security falls in value, well, you lose according to the same multiple. Other ETFs allow you not only to leverage, but also to reverse leverage, So you stand to make money if the underlying security falls in value, and, of course, lose if the underlying security increases in value. I'm not a big fan of leveraged and inverse ETFs. Choosing between the classic and the new indexes. Some of the ETF providers, Vanguard, iShares, Charles Schwab, tend to use traditional indexes, such as those I mentioned in the previous section. Others, Dimensional, WisdomTree, tend to develop their own indexes. For example, if you were to buy 100 shares of an ETF called the iShares S&P 500 Growth Index Fund, ticker symbol IVW, you'd be buying into a traditional index, large U.S. growth companies. At about $70 a share, at the time of this writing, you'd plunk down $7,000 for a portfolio of stocks that would include shares of Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook, Alphabet, Google, and Tesla. If you wanted to know the exact breakdown, the iShares prospectus found on the iShares website, or any number of financial websites, such as finance.yahoo.com, would tell you specific percentages. Apple, 11.3%. Microsoft, 10.3%. Amazon, 7.8%. And so on. Many ETFs represent shares in companies that form foreign indexes. If, for example, you were to own 100 shares of the iShares MSCI Japan Index Fund, ticker symbol EWJ, with a market value of about $69 per share as of this writing, your $6,900 would buy you a stake in large Japanese companies such as Toyota, Motor, SoftBank Group, Sony Group, Keyence, and Mitsubishi UFJ Financial Group. Chapter 5 is devoted entirely to international ETFs. Both IVW and EWJ mirror standard indexes. IVW mirrors the S&P 500 Growth Index, and EWJ mirrors the MSCI Japan Index. If, however, you purchase 100 shares of the Invesco Dynamic Large Cap Growth ETF, ticker symbol PWB, you'll buy roughly $7,100 worth of a portfolio of stocks that mirror a very unconventional index, one created by the Invesco family of ETFs. The large U.S. growth companies in the Power Shares Index that have the heaviest weightings include Facebook and Alphabet, but also Nvidia and Texas Instruments. Invesco PowerShares refers to its custom indexes as IntelliDex indexes. A big controversy in the world of ETFs is whether the newfangled, customized indexes offered by companies like Invesco make any sense. Most financial professionals are skeptical of anything that's new. We're a conservative lot. Those of us who have been around for a while may have seen too many exciting new investment ideas crash and burn. But I, for one, try to keep an open mind. For now, let me continue with my introduction to ETFs, but rest assured that I address this controversy in Chapter 2 and throughout the rest of this book. Another big controversy is whether you may be better off with an even newer style of ETFs, those that follow no indexes at all, but rather are actively managed. I prefer index investing to active investing, but that's not to say that active investing, carefully pursued, has no role to play. You can find more on that topic later in this chapter and throughout this book. Other ETFs, a distinct but growing minority, represent holdings in assets other than stocks, most notably bonds and commodities, gold, silver, oil, and such. And then there are exchange-traded notes, ETNs, which allow you to venture even further into the world of alternative investments, or speculations, such as currency futures. I discuss these products in Part 2. Preferring ETFs over individual stocks. Okay, why buy a basket of stocks rather than an individual stock? Quick answer, you'll sleep better. a company I'll call ABC Pharmaceutical, sees its stock shoot up by 68% because the firm just earned an important patent for a new diet pill. A month later, the stock falls by 84% because a study in the New England Journal of Medicine found that the new diet pill causes people to hallucinate and think they're Genghis Khan. Compared to the world of individual stocks, the stock market as a whole is as smooth as a morning lake. Heck, a daily rise or fall in the Dow of more than a percent or two, well, maybe 2% or 3% these days, is generally considered a pretty big deal. Remember, if you, like me, are not especially keen on roller coasters, you're advised to put your nest egg into not one stock, not two, but many. If you have a few million sitting around, hey, you'll have no problem diversifying. Maybe individual stocks are for you. But for most of us commoners, the only way to effectively diversify is with ETFs or mutual funds. Distinguishing ETFs from mutual funds. Remember. So, what's the difference between an ETF and a mutual fund? After all, mutual funds also represent baskets of stocks or bonds. The two, however, are not twins. They're not even siblings. Cousins are more like it. Here are some of the big differences between ETFs and mutual funds. ETFs are bought and sold just like stocks, through a brokerage house, either by phone or online, and their prices change throughout the trading day. Mutual fund orders can be made during the day, but the actual trading doesn't occur until after the markets close. ETFs tend to represent indexes, market segments, and the managers of the ETFs tend to do very little trading of securities in the ETF. The ETFs are passively managed. Most mutual funds are actively managed. Although they may require you to pay small trading fees, ETFs usually wind up costing you much less than mutual funds because the ongoing management fees are typically much lower, and there is never a load, an entrance and or exit fee, sometimes an exorbitant one, as you find with many mutual funds. Because of low portfolio turnover, and also the way ETFs are structured, ETFs generally declare much less in taxable capital gains than mutual funds do. Table 1-1 provides a quick look at some ways that investing in ETFs differs from investing in mutual funds and individual stocks. Table 1-1. Comparing ETFs, mutual funds, and individual stocks. Are they priced, bought, and sold throughout the day? ETFs? Yes. Mutual funds? No. Individual stocks? Yes. Do they offer some investment diversification? ETFs? Yes. Mutual funds? Yes. Individual stocks? No. Is there a minimum investment? ETFs? No. Mutual funds? Yes. Individual stocks? No. Are they purchased through a broker or online brokerage? ETFs? Yes. Mutual funds? Yes. Individual stocks? Yes. Do you pay a fee or commission to make a trade? ETFs? Rarely. Mutual funds? Sometimes. Individual stocks? Rarely. Can that fee or commission be more than a few dollars? ETFs? No. Mutual funds? Yes. Individual stocks? No. Can you buy/sell options? ETFs? Sometimes. Mutual funds? No. Individual stocks? Sometimes. Are they indexed? Passively managed? ETFs? Typically. Mutual funds? Atypically. Individual stocks? No. Can you make money or lose money? ETFs? Yes. Mutual funds? Yes. Individual stocks? You bet. Why the big boys prefer ETFs. When ETFs were first introduced, they were primarily of interest to institutional traders, insurance companies, hedge fund people, banks, whose investment needs are often considerably more complicated than yours and mine. In this section, I explain why ETFs appeal to the largest investors. Trading in large lots. Prior to the introduction of ETFs, a trader had no easy way to buy or sell instantaneously, in one fell swoop, hundreds of stocks or bonds. Because ETFs trade both during market hours and, in some cases, after market hours, they made that possible. Institutional investors also found other things to like about ETFs. For example, ETFs are often used to put cash to productive use quickly or to fill gaps in a portfolio by allowing immediate exposure to an industry sector or geographic region. Savoring the versatility. Unlike mutual funds, ETFs can also be purchased with limit, market, or stop-loss orders, taking away the uncertainty involved with placing a buy order for a mutual fund and not knowing what price you're going to get until several hours after the market closes. See the nearby sidebar, Your Basic Trading Choices, for ETFs or stocks, if you're not certain what limit, market, and stop-loss orders are. And because many ETFs can be sold short, they provide an important means of risk management. If, for example, the stock market takes a dive, then shorting ETFs, selling them now at a locked-in price with an agreement to purchase them back, cheaper, you hope, later on, may help keep a portfolio afloat. For that reason, ETFs have become a darling of hedge fund managers who offer the promise of investments that won't tank should the stock market tank. Your basic trading choices for ETFs or stocks. Buying and selling an ETF is just like buying and selling a stock. There really is no difference. Although you can trade in all sorts of ways, the vast majority of trades fall into the following categories. Market order. This is as simple as it gets. You place an order with your broker or online to buy, say, 100 shares of a certain ETF. Your order goes to the stock exchange, and you get the best available price. Limit order. More exact than a market order, you place an order to buy, say, 100 shares of an ETF at $23 a share. That's the maximum price you'll pay. If no sellers are willing to sell at $23 a share, your order won't go through. If you place a limit order to sell at $23, you'll get your sale if someone is willing to pay that price. If not, there will be no sale. You can specify whether an order is good for the day or until canceled, if you don't mind waiting to see if the market moves in your favor. Stop loss or stop order. Designed to protect you should the price of your ETF or stock take a tumble. A stop-loss order automatically becomes a market order if and when the price falls below a certain point, say 10% below the current price. Stop-loss orders are used to limit investors' exposure to a falling market, but they can, and often do, backfire, especially in very turbulent markets. Proceed with caution. Short sale. You sell shares of an ETF that you've borrowed from the broker. If the price of the ETF then falls, you can buy replacement shares at a lower price and pocket the difference. If, however, the price rises, you're stuck holding a security that is worth less than its market price, so you pay the difference, which can sometimes be huge. For more information on different kinds of trading options, see the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC discussion at sec.gov/investor/alerts/trading101basics.pdf. Why individual investors are learning to love ETFs. Clients I've worked with are often amazed that I can put them into a financial product that will cost them a fraction in expenses compared to what they're currently paying.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?